right, we are streaming on Facebook. We are back. Sean, welcome. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah. So I am actually in a waiting room at a car mechanic shop. This was the only time that they could schedule me for an oil change. And with a big drive across the country next week, we needed to get that in. But the show must go on, as they say in show business. So here we are recording at 1:30 Central Time. So welcome, everybody. I hope you watch this, whether it's live now or later in the group, or even from my personal page. Today, we're going to talk about change of direction speed, how to improve it. Can you get quicker? Can you improve your speed in training? The answer is yes. But before we dig in, speaking of training, Sean, what's going on with your training right now and lately? Like, talk to us about your own personal program. What are you working on?
Okay, so personally, my preferred method of training follows more along the Olympic style weightlifting. So practicing movements like the clean and jerk and the snatch, they're basically ground-based power movements. Some people categorize them as plyometrics, kind of going from a contracted, stretching and contracting again when you kind of jump, leave the ground. And then I like them for contact sports because mostly in the clean and the snatch, you're absorbing load. You throw the weight up and then right. You have it land on you essentially and you catch it. So it builds a lot of rigidity in the pretty much the whole body. It's really good for resiliency training, but I like also that it's a ground-based power movement. So it enhances any sport that requires you to jump or propel yourself in any direction. So those are my preferred method. Obviously coordination, strength, speed and power training are all kind of in there. And a lot of people don't really realize, but for the Olympic lifts, they require a lot of flexibility and mobility. Kind of the overhead squat is one of the key indicators for a snatch. And then that front squat is key indicator for the clean. So not only are we getting more strength and power, but we're also maintaining flexibility. So that's kind of how my program looks. I do that about 3 days a week. And then 2 days a week, also, I'm either working on like mobility or I'm working on conditioning or kind of some other like cleanup areas.
Yeah. And like, we'll talk about that later in the show because the faster the eccentric, the faster the concentric, right? So, So I like to use those specifically around, you know, peak season specific preparation, getting ready for a season. But we were just talking too, remember a couple of weeks ago with one of our youth athletes' fathers talking about the very, very low risk of injury in Olympic weightlifting.
Very low.
People see these big, massive, strong athletes throwing weight around in the Olympics, grabbing this weight overhead, receiving it overhead in the snatch, for example. And it's like, wow, they're going to hurt themselves. But the reality is that the weightlifters have the lowest risk of injury in any of the sports.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
It's less than 0.1% of the way they, for those listening, the way they kind of take those characteristics is they usually take a sample of 100 athletes, how many of the 100 athletes have been injured. And usually like sports like soccer, football have, you know, relatively high rates of injury. But weightlifting has less than, it's a 0.01% chance of injury usually. Wow. So it's one of the lowest, and it's an Olympic sport people forget about. So we're talking about an actual sport where it looks pretty crazy. It's explosive and it's heavy, but it's also really technical. Almost I make it kind of analogous to a golf swing. There's so many factors that go into it. So it's not only expressing strength and power, but you also have to line it up right and time it and the sequencing and the coordination piece of it is super important. So it's arguably one of the best ways to train lifting. Lifting heavy and lifting fast will keep you young and keep you athletic. So, and it's a lifelong sport. So, I mean, they have categories that are 80 years old, people are competing. So,
yeah,
it's pretty special.
Yeah, I love it. So, all right, let's get into it. So, change of direction, speed. Obviously, we need that in basketball. I want to set a couple little kind of foundational elements to this. Say what?
Oh, I was going to say caveats or.
Yeah, nah, just kind of some ground level stuff with basketball. So here's what we know. Men change direction about 1,000 times in one basketball game. Females change direction about 600 times in a basketball game. So you're going to change direction in a basketball game. The question is, how fast can you do it? We also know that 86% of sprints in a basketball game are between 0 and 10 meters in length. That's it. So, and of those, of those movements, 60% of those are only 2 to 4 seconds. They're very, very quick. 60% of all movements, I should say, I'm sorry, in a basketball game are 4 seconds or less. And 86% of sprints in a basketball game are 10 meters or less. So the fact is, our sets and our movements and what we do to train for change of direction speed has to be big, heavy, has to be strong, has to be fast. These are things that we need in to change direction properly in a basketball game. And if we don't, we are really doing ourselves a disservice. So I'm going to share my screen here. And I know we all know what, where to go. We all know what these drills look like, but most basketball players, they love these fancy footwork drills. They love going in and out of ladders. They love doing the different cone drills. And what we know is that type of training, you're basically, in my mind, testing your limits. You're testing what you can do. It's just like the shuttle run, things like that they use at the NFL Combine. There's NBA Combine drills, things like that. You're not improving yourself. You're improving that specific drill. You're not actually improving your motor. You're not improving your body. You're not improving your physical ability to change direction. You're improving yourself with that drill. To improve, we have to improve our bodies. We have to, and there's certain ways to do that, and in certain specific ways, which we're going to go into. But Sean, do you want to talk first about the difference between agility and change of direction? Because people get those two things confused.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't
you start there?
Absolutely. I think you have a really good graphic we can kind of pull up to help us illustrate some of the components. But just as we're looking at this, a lot of people, when they think of agility, what comes to mind is the changing of direction, going hit the cone, change direction, hit the cone, change direction, or pivot from one place to the next. What usually is missing, and the piece that a lot of people forget about, is true agility has a decision-making component involved with it. So if you're doing actual agility training, there needs to be some sort of visual recognition, sound recognition, some sort of
stimulus.
Stimulus. You're reacting to a stimulus. Something happens and then now you're reacting. So if you did a pre-planned drill and you knew all the steps of that drill, that's more change of direction training than it is agility. To change that drill, you could use the same drill and have someone point left or right on a cone. And now you're practicing the reactionary component. So at that point,
right,
not only are you working on change of direction, but now you're also working on decision-making. How well can you scan the cue? How well can you find it, recognize it, and then how well can you act on it? And so if you really want to improve your agility, you need to make sure that you're reacting to something or someone, and then making the decision. Real quick before we get, I want to just hit one little point, but a lot of times this can make you seem like a more, like a faster player. When you can recognize things faster and see things faster, people might be like, oh, that guy's really quick, or that guy's really fast. But truth is, he's really seeing it first. He's got a fast brain because now he's able to recognize and almost be in the right position all the time. So you can almost use that to enhance your speed and putting yourself in proper placement and then making the player the change of direction from that. So it's really both sides. You got to make sure we're kind of hitting it. I'll let Phil go from there. I don't want to get too deep here.
No, yeah, you made a perfect case for it. Agility is basically a response to a stimulus. And so the way I, you know, in terms of basketball, you know, I'm on defense, I'm guarding the ball, and this guy makes a crossover move and tries to beat me to the basket. Agility is responding to, oh, he just went that way, I got to get in front of him, versus the exact opposite is now I have the ball in my hand. I'm pre-planning the move that I'm going to do. And sure, I may react to what he's going to the defender's feet and all that, but I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to go in and out, crossover, and see if I can go left. That's a change of direction thing. It's a predetermined thing. It's not a result of a stimulus. It's, I know what I'm going to do because I've rehearsed this drill or I've rehearsed this move 1,000 times. I know the pattern. I'm going to do it and see if it works, versus the exact opposite side of the ball. When you're defending, it's reactionary. So I'm responding to a stimulus. So a change of direction doesn't necessarily have a mental component per se, but agility definitely does. But when we improve our change of direction speed, obviously we are improving our agility. So let's break it down even further. We have change of direction speed. If we are changing direction, common sense tells us we're going one way first and then we're changing direction and going another way. So there's three components of changing direction. The first is I have to stop going the one way before I go the other. So there's a deceleration phase first. Then there's an isometric, which is literally that fast. And then there's the concentric, or there's the accelerating out of wherever that place we're in to the other direction. So let's talk about it in that order. How do we decelerate? How do we change direction? At the very first part though, how do we decelerate? There's a 2014 study that showed that eccentric strength is the sole predictor of change of direction performance. Eccentric strength. The eccentric is basically for, you know, it's the technical term of what a lot of people call the negative or the lowering of the weight. But eccentric basically means while the muscles are being lengthened. So my standard tempo for a squat, for example, is a 4-0-X-0 tempo. Meaning when my athletes squat, if you can imagine where someone's standing there with a barbell, they're going to lower themselves through the range of motion for 4 seconds. Before coming back up explosively. So they are getting stronger through the eccentric or through the negative. This has been shown in scientific journals that it is a key predictor of change of direction speed. So a practical takeaway is add some tempos to your training. Now I have them prescribed every single exercise, every single set, every single rep. Some people may say that's too much. I don't think so. But what I want to recommend to you is at least add them in your big lifts, in your squats, in your deadlifts, in your lunges, in these things that really, really you can benefit from adding a slower eccentric. We also know that as a side note, eccentric strength, because it improves the cytoskeletal proteins, it helps to prevent injuries. So the stronger we are eccentrically, the more resilient we'll be to injuries. Sean, what do you think about eccentric training? And we'll get into the faster side of eccentrics, like sure. Weightlifting, like you're very, you know, well versed in. But what do you think about the slower eccentrics? What do you think about the deceleration phase, and how do we improve the deceleration phase of change of direction?
I mean, I kind of echo everything you said. For one, I think it's something that not a lot of people see the value in. Usually it's skipped. You get a lot of people that just want to stand up fast. So they'll hit the bottom really quick. They'll kind of plop into their squat. Since we've been using squat, they'll kind of plop down, not really control and sort of wiggle their way back out. But
right.
On top of injury prevention, the eccentric allows you to, what we call like proprioception or a spatial awareness. The eccentric allows you to build that coordination, that awareness, the positional strength in your squat, right. Allows yep. You to coordinate it better. The eccentric also recruits more muscle fibers. So yep. You're getting more tension, you're getting more strength because of that fiber recruitment. The eccentric is also stronger than our concentric. So I can lower more weight. Usually it's about 110% of what you could do for your one rep max. So if I could squat, you know, 300 pounds, my eccentric weight would be 330. So you're stronger. We don't have to get into the detail, but you're essentially separating the muscle proteins by force instead of allowing them to do it by willpower. But to tie this into last week, we had talked about acceleration and running, and we had talked about when I'm sprinting, it's the straight leg that reaches up and out before I strike back. And that reaching with my leg, that hamstring is going through the eccentric, and that's where we see a lot of injuries. So I think the eccentric yeah. phase is extremely important. Like Phil said, every single, doesn't matter what direction you're going, every single change of direction, sport, action has an eccentric component. So to Phil's point with the research, it only makes sense that the faster I can absorb, the faster I can redirect. So having a stronger eccentric component, having a stronger isometric or amortization phase — amortization is the fancy word for the changeover from eccentric to concentric, or that little pause in the middle. Yeah. But the stronger I can come in, the stronger I can go out. And for basketball, this is super important, because say you're on a breakaway and you're running downfield on the court, you want to be able to stop, redirect, and hit vertical. So the stronger you are eccentrically, the more speed and the more force you can bring into your drives to the basket, because you know you're strong enough to stop yourself before either making a cut or making a jump vertically to the net. So it applies in a lot of different ways, but you'll see sometimes guys who are not eccentrically strong, they'll bring way too much speed in when they're driving at the basket, and they don't have enough strength to stop themselves and jump. So you'll see a missed trajectory on their vertical. So they come in this way, they can't stop enough. So instead of making that transfer of the weight going up, they kind of transfer forward, and you might miss your dunk or miss your layup or something. But the eccentric qualities are paramount for decelerating, which is the first step in changing direction.
Yeah. How many times have you seen a basketball player try to make a move, and you see him kind of, his body gets ahead of himself and he stumbles and he falls, exactly, or he gets into the lane, he makes a move, he actually beats his defender, gets into the paint, and just can't get his feet right. He can't decelerate, slow down in time to get his feet where he needs to be, kind of trips over his own feet, kind of falls and stumbles. I'm sure I've done it plenty of times in my former career. I'm sure y'all watching have done it or seen somebody do it. And that's very attributable, maybe coordination here and there, but it's really attributable to not being able to stop your body, not being able to eccentrically control your body. To get even more specific, our hamstrings, fast twitch muscle fibers, but they're our main decelerators. And if you think about from a, evolutionary perspective, from a, ancestral perspective, our bodies are built for survival first and foremost. And so we're made to run down an animal, to kill it, to feed our family, or to run from an animal to survive, or to fight the damn thing. So we're fast twitch beings. Those hamstrings are big, fast muscle fibers, and they're our primary decelerators. And so again, ancestrally, when those things are big and strong, we're a little better at fighting. We're a little better at eluding. We're a little better at getting away. And on a basketball court, again, when you think from that standpoint, the bigger, stronger our hamstrings are, the better, faster we'll be able to decelerate, change direction. And so with my hamstring work, with my posterior chain work, 4 seconds, 5 seconds, 6 second negatives, really, really slow, making sure your hamstrings are really, really available and able to stretch and strengthen through that range of motion and through the stretch. Hugely important for hamstrings. So then we have that amortization phase. Sean, anything on that? You want to cover amortization and that split second isometric?
Yeah, I'd definitely like to cover that. The amortization phase, like Phil said, is the time in between your slowing down and speeding up. And so doing little things like little twitchy sort of jumps or hops or quarter reps or anything where you're bouncing on the ankles usually helps enhance that amortization phase. The amortization phase also, you might have heard, called the stretch shortening cycle or the stretch reflex. Essentially what that's saying is, you get an extra bit of pop on the way back out when you stop and go. And so working that helps. There's kind of like we say, there's kind of two sides of producing force. There's the neural side and then the muscular side. So the brain sends the impulse, the muscles contract and squeeze. Well, when you work on those like twitchy bounces, it's kind of like how when the doctor hits your knee and you reflex, right? Something you can't control. But what happens is, as the doctor hits your knee, it puts a stretch on that tendon in your knee. When your body recognizes an external stretch that it didn't do on its own, the natural response is to contract as a force, as a protective mechanism. It doesn't know how long that tension is going to stay or how much stretch you're going to get, but you respond by producing force. And so that amortization phase, when you come in and you start that deceleration, deceleration is an eccentric, which is the lengthening and stretching of a muscle. So your body's natural response is to contract as a protective mechanism. And you can actually train that. Some people call it joint stiffness or tendon stiffness. But stiffness training essentially is training the muscles to absorb and reproduce and enhance that stretch shortening cycle, that stretch reflex. You essentially get a neural input on top of the muscular contraction. That's why when you do a bounce jump versus a stop jump, or like a non-counter movement, or like a pause jump, it's a lot harder than when you bounce, because you're not getting the extra impulses. So the amortization phase is trainable. It's super important. The decel is first, but once you get into that decel, the next piece is going from stop to start. And that's where the twitchiness really starts to come in. And like I said, any kind of bouncing or plyometric or like rapid bouncing actions help train that turnover.
So in terms of change of direction, we have the eccentric strength we covered, which my last point on that is Stefan Cazol out of Kilo Strength Society in Huntington Beach, who he's a whiz with programming. He's worked with NBA athletes, NFL athletes, athletes all over the world. Now he's a teacher and a trainer of other strength coaches. He's quoted as saying, you have to, or athletes need to earn the right to train fast. So I'm big on making sure, like Sean said, clients know and are aware of their body in an eccentric fashion. If we're using a squat, for example, through the lowering, and then over time, we can speed those things up as we get closer to the season and specific prep. We can speed those things up. We can add in the Olympic lifts, things like that. But you as an athlete, if you haven't trained long, you don't have the right to train fast yet. You got to earn that. You got to show me you're strong here. You got to show me you're strong in certain areas before we do that. So we have eccentric strength. We have isometric strength, like Sean just covered, or the amortization phase. And now we're going to talk about concentric phase. And this is what most athletes typically focus on only in the weight room. Again, using the squat as an example, they just drop and then stand up, drop faster than stand up. Not necessarily ideal in most situations, but when you think about, let's use a crossover dribble, for example, or you're just catching the ball on the wing and pushing off and ripping through, sweeping through and pushing that ball out and trying to get to the basket in one or two dribbles, that push off, we'll call it the concentric. Okay. That's that third phase of change of direction speed. Now we're talking about how big of a force can you push into the ground? And if we go back to those ladder drills that we just looked at, and that guy with the fancy footwork, sure, it's going to get you likes on Instagram, and it looks fancy and it looks flashy and everybody's doing it. And all these companies have all these different products for you to buy saying you're going to be faster, and coaches market speed training. Sorry, but it's a bunch of bull. It really is. You need to be able to apply a force to the ground, as strong a force as possible, in as quickly, in as quick a time, as short a time as possible. Rate of force development, rate of force production. There's a lot of terms out there for it, but essentially, how strong do you need to be? That's the question. There's a study, I believe it was from 2015 by Delaney. I'm going to look it up. I'm going to post it below. But what he found was when athletes change direction, the forces that are running through their body are equal to two times their body weight, two times their body weight. So how strong do you need to be? Well, there's your answer. You probably need to be able to deadlift twice your body weight. You probably need to be able to squat twice your body weight, because these are the forces that are running through your body when you're changing direction at 100% intensity. And now we can understand a little bit better, why are people getting injured? Why does somebody come off of a screen, catch the ball, pump fake, one dribble, pull up, and when they move, their knee goes out, their ankle goes out, they pull a hamstring? It's because they haven't trained their body to absorb those forces. They haven't trained their body to go through two times their body weight forces. Muscles, tendons, ligaments are like, screw you, man, I can't take this. I've never done this before. I don't have the ability to manipulate this amount of weight, this amount of force. I'm done. I'm out. I'm weak. We're injured. Okay. So maximal strength is really important. Weight or rate of force production is greatly important for change of direction speed. Not these fluttery, sorry, I want to swear at them, not these fluttery ladder drills and cone drills. Sean, add on, because I'm now just rambling and listening
this. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about just you're covering a little bit of the importance of the eccentric strength being twice your body weight. I mean, fully agree. I think two times body weight squat or deadlift is a great goal for anyone. You made a really good point, though, with how strong do we need to be, because that's obviously a very common argument, especially in certain sports. Or is the weight room more important? Is the practice stuff more important? And then kind of where do you put your eggs in what basket? I will start by saying you always need to protect the integrity of practice. Your practice is usually very intense. It should be game speed if you're working hard. But as far as transfer, and our goal in the weight room is to transfer training to the court so that what you do in the weight room helps you on the court. Well, practice is one of those things where it's exact transfer. It's a 100% transfer over. So we got to protect the integrity of practice. So to do that, we want to make sure you're not broken and beat up going into your season. So that's why we're making sure we're doing things that are heavier and more explosive, because usually things that are heavier and more explosive have less reps involved, right? We're not doing sets of 10, 12, 15, where now you're increasing the volume. We want to keep the volume very small. We want to keep the intensity very high so that everything is fast and explosive and looks more like game speed. So that'll help keep the integrity of practice. I did want to make a quick point. You had mentioned, I'm going to have to go through, I was writing some stuff down, but we were talking about deadlifts and then body weight. Rate of force development. So to touch on rate of force development real quick, because this is a really important thing. It's not how strong are you, because strength has no time component. I can spend 5 seconds grinding a weight off the ground. If it's a deadlift, you guys have seen some world record deadlifts. The guy gets down, he sits there, and it's slow. And it may take him 5 seconds. That guy is strong. But that does not display power or speed. There's a zero time factor in that deadlift. So we need to be able to move weight. So being strong will make you powerful. Sorry. You need to be strong to be powerful. But
it increases just your being potential. Strong
doesn't make you powerful. So you still need to work the weight side, and you need to make sure you're working on the velocity side, max effort movements, light things that help velocity and speed, while you're also working things that help the strength. So it's kind of a multifaceted approach. The same way, if we're training eccentrics, we have to train isometrics so the bottom position is good. And we also have to train the concentrics so that the outward is good. So we're in this like V shape. We come into the movement, we isometric, and then we come out of the movement. So we hit this little V with the eccentric, the isometric, the concentric. And it's a similar way with training for strength and training for speed and power. So strength is your base. Speed and power are your fine tuning, essentially. But rate of force development is super important. So we need to make sure we're hitting weights so that it increases my potential for speed and power. But I don't know if we can get into this, might make a little more sense, but power has a math formula. Power is force times velocity. So I can increase the force to increase my power, and I can increase my velocity to increase my power. But we want to do both so that my power has the most maximal, you know, force production, speed, all that stuff. So force and velocity make power. That was long, sorry.
Yeah, no, and I like to kind of, you know, if you can look at it like you have a cup of water that's, you know, 300 milliliters. The maximum that you can have in that is 300 milliliters. Now, if you have a 2-liter cup, now you can have 2 liters of water. Your potential has increased. When we are getting stronger, we are increasing our cup. We are increasing our ability to store more, to have more on hand and on disposal to then use in that power formula. And I've talked about it in other videos, but so there's those fast twitch muscle fibers, those type 2 fibers, they're recruited one of two ways. They're recruited either by moving fast, which Sean talked about, or by moving heavy things. When you move heavy things, granted, you might move slower, but you're still recruiting those type 2 fibers. But we are basically enhancing our glass to hold more water. And so as we get closer to the season, now we can develop that power even more so because we have a greater capacity to, we have the potential to, and then we train our nervous system to utilize that strength and to basically put it into that power formula like Sean talked about, and to improve our explosiveness. So, so don't shy away from heavy things, but as we get closer to the season, yeah, then we can start moving faster. We can start moving lighter. And Sean, who's very well versed, who's very good at the weightlifting, the Olympic lifting. When I say weightlifting, the cleans, the snatches, the jerks, all these things that you see in the Olympics, high level of proficiency, high level of technical, prowess involved, but he's moving a lot of weight fast. And he's moving it, it's ground-based. He's pushing off of the ground. This directly correlates and directly translates to being able to push off the ground in a game, whether you're going vertically for a vertical jump or whether you're pushing off horizontally for a change of direction change of direction speed. Going back to strength really quick, and this is my last point of the day. I'll post the study here in the comments, but another thing that they found is relative strength is more determinant to change of direction speed than maximal strength. So what do I mean by relative strength? It means if I can squat 100 kilos and I weigh 100 kilos, I'm going to be probably not as fast change of direction speed than if I can squat 100 kilos and I only weigh 80. So the weight that I can move relative to my body weight is very important. So what that has to do with body composition, and it makes sense. The leaner we are, the less fat we're carrying, the more, ripped, toned, jacked, whatever, bro word you want to use.
Fat don't fly, baby.
Yeah, fat doesn't fly. So trim down your fat. Body composition is important, and be strong relative to your body weight. That's going to improve your change of direction speed also in a big way. That's my last point of the day. Sean, got anything else that we missed, that we touched on, that we missed? Do you want to go back and revisit that chart?
Yeah, let's go back to that slide real quick with some of the agility stuff on there, if we could, for just a second.
Yeah.
We're good there. So some of the technical stuff we didn't quite get into. You can see if we're looking at this slide over agility, you scroll to the right. Now we're looking at change of direction factors. There's technical stuff and there's physical stuff. Here's the thing I kind of want to highlight, especially as it pertains to speed training and sprint training, because a lot of us are doing that acceleration based training to make sure that we can defend faster, cover ground quicker, or make a faster drive. Like Phil said earlier, most of basketball happens in 10 meters at a time or so. So a lot of people, when they're doing speed training or agility training, we get really caught up on the technical factors. Some people say you have to look a certain way when you sprint, or you have to look a certain way when you're jumping. Maybe, but if the technical side doesn't mean I'm producing more on the physical side, then we still need to make sure we're loading weights and we're moving things to make physical changes in the body. So this is more like sprint specific. So if you just did a whole bunch of sprint technique stuff that never actually increased your capacity to produce force, then you might not be maximizing your time with the technique, because all of it should translate to faster movement. So it's kind of, finding the right things and finding the best way to make the outcome goal apparent. So you want to move faster. Sometimes it's not always technical. Sometimes you got to kind of get gritty and get on the physical side of things, where you're towing sleds or pushing sleds or doing more horizontal work where you're moving weight sideways versus up and down. I think that'll really help change a direction. I know as basketball players, we get stuck on a lot of vertical movement, got to be able to jump high, but being able to drop your level and accelerate is going to make a big difference for you guys. So
someone's already calling, wanting to some chain of direction, speed training.
Sorry. I'm going to have to, I don't know how to mute the call.
It's all good.
I'm new here.
All right, everybody. Well, I really do appreciate those of you who watch. I really am loving sharing the science behind how to become a better basketball player. I wish I had this when I was a basketball player back in the day. So my goal, my mission in my career is to help even one basketball player become better, become faster, become stronger, improve his change in direction speed, improve his vertical jump, be more resilient to injury. These are things that I just am so passionate about, and I want to help you. And so I hope you got something out of this. To those of you who really do need change of direction speed, leave a comment below. Please ask questions. Don't hesitate. I love questions. I love comments. And if there's anything in your training that you specifically want advice on, post a video, post a picture, post a question about it, and we can talk about it. That's it for now. We'll see you next week, 1:30 p.m. Central Time. Catch you in the group.